Last fall, in a sermon, I shared about my father and how he was diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment. As I said then, my father is, doing pretty well, but he is expected to slip into dementia at some point, and actually he has been diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's. But there has actually been an interesting twist in the tale. Around the time that I gave that sermon, my father was accepted into a new drug research program. And it's an interesting drug. It's not something that just designed to treat the symptoms, but to actually slow the progress of the disease. As you would expect, my family and I are all very happy about this. This is really the first hint of hope that we've had in the 2 years, or nearly 2 years, since his diagnosis. And yet, it's a tricky kind of hope. First, we can't be certain that he's on the real drug. He could be on the placebo. Even if he is on the real drug, it may not be effective. A similar research program was canceled early in the winter. And even if he is on the real drug and it's effective, the long-term prognosis isn't good. I share this story because what my family and I have confronted over these last 2 years is something that we all might confront at one time or another. How do we find hope in this? That's the question. How do we find hope in this? This is something we encounter. We encounter that when we're struck with an illness, or a loved one is struck with an illness. We might encounter that when a job or our career goes off track, when a relationship is failing, when we're dealing with loneliness or depression. Now, there's definitely something to be said for the power of hope in these situations. Reverend Anya talked about that in a sermon earlier this year, how hope can sustain us in the most difficult circumstances. She said that hope calls us from the actual to the possible. It calls us from the actual to the possible, and that it's a catalyst for creativity. And we've seen the truth of this. Desmond Tutu, who endured decades of apartheid in South Africa, he defined hope as being able to see that there is light despite all of the darkness. And the Dalai Lama, whose people have spent more than half a century in exile, he said that no matter what sort of difficulties, no matter how painful experience is, if we lose our hope, that's our real disaster. And then there's that quote by Julian of Norwich, "All shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well." There are times when this thought can be comforting. The idea that in the larger scheme of things, all shall be well, even if we don't really see how. It's a powerful expression of hope, of faith. And I get that. But there are also times when hope eludes us. In some cases, we're scared to hope because it just might break our heart in the end. In other cases, we see no reasonable cause for hope. Either way, to make matters worse, we have a tendency to see hope as a virtue. Something that reflects on our personal character. Not having hope can leave us feeling as if we're weak or flawed. But frankly, that is not a realistic view of human nature. We are messy creatures shaped by so many forces beyond our control. I wish that we could all be like Desmond Tutu or Julian of Norwich. But that's not realistic, and it's not especially helpful. Sometimes hope fails us. Even if we feel hopeful some days, other days we don't. That's human nature. And this idea is captured beautifully in a book I read. Actually, I read it when I was in Oregon. with my father 2 years ago. It's called A Monster Calls by Patrick Ness, and it's a book that's written for older children or teens. It's about a boy whose mother has cancer. And one day, a monster shows up. And it becomes quickly apparent that the monster is there to help the boy deal with his grief. In particular, to help the boy deal with the guilt he feels over feeling hopeless, over just wanting it to be over. The boy is tortured by his thoughts. But the monster tells him, "It does not matter what you think, because your mind will contradict itself 100 times a day." The monster says that, yes, sometimes our minds will hold on to hope, other times not. And it doesn't matter, because those are just thoughts. They don't define how we are. Those are just thoughts. That's just how the mind can work when we're dealing with difficult circumstance. So I want to put this out there. Yes, hope is a wonderful thing. It can be a powerful force. But also, it's okay if we don't feel hope. It's not a personal failing. You know, when I was working on this sermon, I felt a little kind of antsy about this topic, because I realized it's sort of an odd thing for a minister to stand up here and say, it's okay not to feel hope. You know, that's okay. But I think it needs to be heard. We need to hear that. It's okay not to feel hope. But I also want to say this. Just because we don't feel hope, we don't have to feel despair. We tend to think that it's an either-or situation. Either we feel hope or we feel hopelessness. But there's this wonderful quote by Pablo Casals. I've mentioned him before. He was a musician and a humanist. He was really famous in the middle of the 20th century. And he once said, "The situation is hopeless. We must take the next step." The situation is hopeless. We must take the next step. I love this quote. It moves us beyond this false dichotomy of hope and hopelessness. It suggests there's another option. So what is that next step? As I've wrestled with this in my own life, I have found myself coming back again and again to that reading we heard earlier from Rhonda. T.S. Eliot wrote, "I said to my soul, be still and wait without hope, for hope would be hope for the wrong thing." Wait without hope. That's the idea that intrigues me. And actually, after the first service, Terry came up to me. She knows Spanish, she loves languages. And she said that the word hope in Spanish means both hope and to wait. Both hope and wait. I love this idea that there's this middle ground between hope and hopelessness, a place where we can wait when we don't feel hope, but don't want to give in to despair. What I'm talking about is a liminal space. Are you familiar with that word, liminal? Liminal space, it's one of these seminary words, so, you know, just one of those things. But it's a wonderful word. A liminal space, liminal means sort of an in-between time or an in-between place. It's like twilight. Twilight is neither day nor night. It's something in between. And sort of like twilight, a liminal space or time might be a place or time of transition, or it just might be a time or place that's set apart, a place where we can be still and wait, a place where we can simply be present, letting go of both our hopes and our fears, if only for a little while. That isn't to say that those hopes and fears go away altogether. Again, not realistic. But what we can do is try to hold them more lightly. We can try to keep ourselves from getting swept away by them. Do you know what I mean? When I'm worried about something, when I've got some fear in the back of my mind, I have a tendency to sort of go over it again and again as if I'm rehearsing for the future. It's a very natural thing to do. But this kind of repeated rumination can be exhausting and fruitless. Actually, it was 2 years ago. I remember I was sitting in a class in seminary. This is my last semester in seminary. And I was having a pretty tough time of it because I had my day job, I had a church job, and I had two very intense courses. And so I spent a lot of my time really tired. And on this particular morning, I was sitting there and I was just saying to myself over and over again, I am so tired. I am so tired. I am so tired. And during the break, when I was getting my caffeine, it occurred to me, maybe this really wasn't the best thing to do. Maybe this wasn't helping. So I tried an experiment. When I got back to class, I was still tired, but I did not think about it. I stopped saying, I am so tired, I'm so tired. But I tried to just sort of be with that tiredness and not obsess on it. And it was remarkable. I was still tired, but I was at peace with it. I didn't feel stressed about it, and it made an amazing difference. And this, I think, is how we create liminal space. We just try to be present to how things are, however difficult they might be. And we try to do our best to respond as best we can to what the situation seems to require. We just do our best. That's what I'm talking about. And respond is an important word here. Respond, not react. Because when we get caught up in our hopes and fears for the future, we might find ourselves acting out of fear and anxiety or just shutting down. That kind of emotional reactivity is understandable. It truly is. But like I said, it can be exhausting. Taking a break from our hopes and fears, finding that liminal space, can give us a greater sense of stability and clarity, helping us to respond more thoughtfully. This is something I've really been working on over these last 2 years. When my father received his initial diagnosis, my wife and I actually flew out there for the appointment. And, you know, we received the diagnosis, which we were expecting. But I found myself in the couple days after that, I was just really kind of tied up inside. I was very kind of just tied up in knots. And what that did was it made it difficult for me to be emotionally available to my parents, just when they needed me most. And so over these last 2 years, I've learned to kind of hold my worries lightly, not suppressing them. They're still there. But just hold them lightly, not dwelling on them. And this really has made it easier for me to help my parents in any way I can, whether it's with practical things or just being providing emotional support. But just as important, doing that practice, finding that liminal space, has made it easier for me just to be present to them. Just to be present and just to feel my love for them and their love for me. And you see, that's the other thing about liminal space. When we let go of our hopes and fears and just open ourselves to the present, we just might find moments of joy there. We just might find glimpses of beauty in the midst of all that darkness. These moments, these glimpses, they don't change the bigger picture. But we can savor them all the same. And they can help sustain us even when hope eludes us. Earlier I said how Desmond Tutu defined hope as being able to see that there is light despite all of the darkness. Perhaps this liminal space I'm talking about is just another form of hope. It's not a hope that is based on what will or will not happen. Instead, it's a hope that's based on our openness to doing the best we can wherever we find ourselves and whatever happens next. Just doing what we can in that moment. Just being present to it. I don't pretend that this is easy, and I know it's not. But I also know this. We don't have to walk this path alone. Every Sunday, when I stand up here, I'm reminded of that. Every Sunday, when we gather as a community in this room, we make this room, this sanctuary, a liminal space. A liminal space where each of us might find rest. Every time we gather in small groups to share, to learn, to sing, we create a liminal space, a place in which we might lie down our burdens, even if just for a little while. And every time we renew our covenant as a faith community, we create a liminal space, a space in which hope might someday be rekindled. May it be so.